Well, good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, Father.
It's just so good to be here and to start another day with my Rabbi.
It spiritually fulfills me.
Yes, it does. And I will never forget the time when we were at Temple together and you introduced me as your priest. Mm-hmm. And then I'll never forget the time when we went to All Saints Episcopal Church and then you told that story of introducing me as your priest and everyone laughed. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, I was being serious.
I'm serious.
He's my priest. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is a serious moment. Mm. So welcome.
It's not
everyone.
Comedy hour.
Yeah. Sometimes we seem like goofballs, but, so hey everyone, welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi for another podcast here. And it is just a joy to have you here. And, we are just so grateful when you tune in here where we take on just a ton of different topics, but you know, we take it from a priest and a rabbi's context, but just a lot of it is just from a faith perspective. And, you know, whatever platform you're listening on right now, we'd love for you to subscribe and to give it a ranking. You know, to, if you're on iTunes, we love for you to give it stars. We love 5 stars, of course. A comment on what you would like for us to speak about in the future. Leave a comment below on that. And then share this with other folks out there who would really kind of get off on a podcast like that, which takes on everything from prayer to how to deal with tragedy to sex trafficking, but also to other things like what are the top 5 misinterpretations of Christianity and Judaism. So we like to have fun doing that. So speaking of which, you had your daughter jumping on Alexa or Google Home, right, the other day?
So I about a month ago or so, I decided that I thought technology was kind of cool and bought for my kids the Google Home and the Google Mini. So I have the Google Home at home and set it up and this, that, and the other. And the other day, I come home and my daughter was in her room and she all I heard was this, you know, 7-year-old voice saying, "Okay, Google, play A Priest and a Rabbi." So I thought, wow, this is amazing. She's listening to our podcast. This is great. So she's listening and suddenly I hear her laughing. So I go in. I go, "What's so funny? What are you listening to?" She goes, "I'm listening to your podcast, Dad. You and Father Anderson, you guys are hilarious." And then, of course, the episode that she was listening to happened to be about human sex trafficking.
Oh,
as we got into that conversation, the part of me is, you know, I kind of like, you know, the eyes wide open and said, "Okay, Google, next podcast, please." But you know, it's something that it is just so accessible. You know, the platforms that we're on and. You know, and I think it is something that, you know, the aim of the podcast that we set out to was, you know, we are two regular clergy that, you know, want to explore pop culture and take it from a Judeo-Christian lens on how we, you know, see major challenges in our world and how we can respond to some of these challenges.
Yeah.
I think it's about accessibility, and I think a challenge that some people have, this whole religious thing, it's not accessible for me. That's a self-imposed limitation. Mm-hmm. It's very accessible. You can walk in the door. But this podcast is fantastic. Like Rabbi Durbin, I have 3 daughters. And an unabashed shout-out to my eldest daughter, Lillian, mm-hmm. who is my consultant on podcasts and Instagram and many other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she'll watch this podcast or listen to this podcast, pardon me. And it's really amazing. It's really a great vehicle and for people to have an access to listen to a priest and a rabbi. And occasionally a lawyer or some other guest. Mm-hmm. It's been wonderful being part of the show with you guys today.
So this is, you're hearing the voice of Gary Lesser, who is our guest today. We are continuing on a part 2 of The Power of Prayer. Is it powerful or powerless? And Gary Lesser is one of the top personal injury attorneys here in Florida. So he is our guest today. And so you'll be hearing from him. And also, how does he bring prayer as a self-proclaimed conservadox Jew? That's the conservative movement, Orthodox movement, amalgamation of the two. So how does, but most importantly, though, his relationship with God and his relationship with prayer, how does that feed him and how does he approach that just as a human being, as a regular guy, but then also as a very, very active attorney and seeing a lot of loss and a lot of tragedy? How does prayer affect him, find release, find peace? Because another powerful part of prayer is to bring peace into our lives. So all that is coming up on this podcast, and we are excited to have you here. So please enjoy the show. Gary, we're looking forward to having you on this, and thank you for stopping by the studio today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to sit down and talk with a rabbi and a priest. It's a pretty good opportunity to talk about matters of faith and spirituality. is just tremendous. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. No, we're looking forward to it. So, all right, we'll stay tuned for part two of The Power of Prayer. Is it powerful or is it pointless?
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, all you fantastic Martin County folks from across the world. From everyone who's tuning in straight from the radio from 1450 AM, for those who are streaming online, we are so glad that you are here on another Friday morning. And it's you are listening to Father Christian Anderson from St. Mary's Episcopal Church. And I also have the most handsome rabbi you have seen on this side of the Mississippi, Rabbi Matthew Durbin from Beit Haim, Temple Beit Haim. And today we have a special guest. We have Mr. Gary Lesser, who is a fantastic and fabulous attorney here with offices from Lesser, Landy & Smith. You might have seen him on TV. He's a personal injury attorney. He's a managing partner over there. And also, he's going to be coming on studio today as we continue this series we have on prayer, the power of prayer. Is it powerful or is it pointless? Last week we had Father Todd Cederberg on, and we got a little vulnerable on here, and we went below the surface, which was good, to talk about prayer in the time of tremendous loss. Where is God in all this? Rabbi, I thought it was a powerful show last week.
I did too.
Yeah. You know, he's a man of few words, but he's a powerful man. So if you go to hear his sermons, you're in and out in about 3 minutes. So that's why we love him here. Gary, welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for having me this morning.
So Gary is, a personal injury attorney. Your firm is 92 years young. Your grandfather started, I assume?
Yeah, he came to Florida in 1927 and didn't want to leave and started our firm back there in 1927. He did not want to go back to Rome, Georgia.
Okay, all right.
A fine town, mind you, but Florida is nice.
And so you and I met at your annual Christmas party or holiday party that was up at the Tuckahoe. No, is it Tuckahoe?
Yeah.
Tuckahoe Mansion. So I got there because Commissioner Clark invited my wife and I, and then I bump into you, and then you mentioned that you had, during your opening introduction for your party that night, you had actually quoted from the New Testament.
Yes.
From Christian scripture. And so I was like, okay, what's going on with this guy? This guy's interesting. And then we started to talk more, and you gave me your background about how you knew already Rabbi Durbin, and that you have this interesting amalgamation or practice of conservative Judaism and Orthodox Judaism. And so I was like, we got to get this guy on the show, Rabbi. We got to get this guy on the show. And so we've been trying to work it out. You're a busy man, which is obviously when you have such a powerful personal injury firm. So we got you here. But a little bit about Gary. He serves on the Florida Board of Governors. He's also served as the chief of the Florida Bar Professional Ethics Committee and the chair of Advertising Committee. He has also served as a chair of the Palm Beach County Bar Association's Professionalism Committee and chair of the Medical Legal Committee for many years. So he's one of Florida's leading personal injury attorneys. So we didn't just go on Craigslist and say, give us an attorney who also is Jewish. We got one of the best here. So.
It's amazing the power of Google.
Yes.
A little Google search.
Or just, your website. You know, it's one on your website. It's right there. So, Gary, no, I'm really excited to keep on delving further into this idea of the power of prayer, especially now where we do live in this kind of post-religious time in America, where we're seeing just declining numbers across the board, but people, I don't think, are becoming more atheistic. I still think people are hungry for the divine, for our higher power. If they don't know how to define it, they're hungry for direction, for purpose, and obviously a big piece of that is our prayer life. You know, that's how we converse, that's how we connect with the higher power, in all our respective traditions. So I want to start off first, though, because since I have both of you here, is there, and I think our audience would like to know this, are there clear differences in the approach to prayer between the three major Jewish movements that we have here represented between the Reform movement, the Conservative movement, and the Orthodox movement, and just how prayer is understood and defined.
Well, I'm never one to focus on differences. I'm more looking towards commonality. Certainly, you know, our Jewish traditions, and I would defer to the rabbi who's an ordained rabbi over my longtime interest in studying. But the three different faiths all believe in God, all believe in prayer. How deeply you go in the water and the way that you swim is where it differs the most. But I've prayed in Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform synagogues many, many times and feel at home in all three houses, so to speak.
Now, is that common to find people like yourself who feel comfortable in all three homes?
Yeah, I think that it's more common than we know. I think we often end up at a house of worship that's not our own, at a funeral or a wedding or something like that. But it's something I think we should all do more often. I frankly have enjoyed going to church sporadically my whole life. As a little kid sleeping over a friend's house and then going to a Catholic service or a Baptist service, I found it all fascinating. And you can pray anywhere.
Hmm. Where did you get that fascination or that comfortability with just walking into any house of worship?
Probably my grandfather.
Hmm. Okay.
He was a fascinating man. When I was a little boy, I wanted to be just like him. That's why I wanted to be a lawyer, and that's why I really love going to services, which is, you know, you don't hear that often. I would go to synagogue with him, and he would pray and sing, and he has a voice like mine, so he sings like me. Hmm. Not great, but with great enjoyment of the services. And he was one of the first Jewish rabbis, one of the Jewish lawyers in West Palm Beach. He got very involved right away with the Salvation Army, which is fascinating because if you go to their website and you look up their mission statement, it's to do the evangelical work of Jesus Christ. So what's a Jewish lawyer doing that?
Okay.
The Salvation Army then and now helps so many people who might not otherwise be helped. And that to him was very meaningful. He went to every Christmas party, and he tells his story. One year he gets the call. Joe, I don't feel good, and I need you to be Santa Claus. So a Jewish guy's going to dress up as Santa Claus? Not a problem. And it was a 5'7" Jewish guy from Rome, Georgia. That was the biggest challenge. But other than that, he loved it. He said, I never had to stand up. I had the beard on. And to see people who want to feel spiritual and have a holiday spirit, he enjoyed that very much.
Hmm. Right. So he was, just remind me if I got this right, he worked as the attorney for the Salvation Army?
Actually, he was the general counsel for the Salvation Army for Palm Beach County for decades.
Wow. Yeah, it speaks a lot about the Salvation Army, too, you know, that there's the comfortability to say that for their mission statement, obviously, is to spread the word of Jesus Christ. But for them to say, you know what, we just want the best man for the job who's going to be committed to the mission in a way where we can trust the ethics, we can trust. He must have had a heart of gold, because for them to say, this is the guy, this is the one we can trust, who has the right ethics, who's going to do the right thing for this mission, which is powerful enough. And now, have you both, Rabbi and Gary, have you both had a lot of interaction throughout the years, or just known each other loosely within the Jewish community?
So I met Gary formally. My wife serves as the campus rabbi for Hillel down in FAU, down in Boca. And every year they do their big Hillel event, I Am Hillel. And I know a couple years ago, Gary, you were honored as their guest for their event. And this year, at Congregation B'nai Torah in Boca, I met you formally, which was wonderful. So it's, you know, but it's an interesting conversation as well when you go back to, you know, Father Anderson, your initial conversation in terms of comfortability amongst all three denominations within Judaism. And I think we try and teach that to our kids as well, which is to say, we want you to be comfortable. Although we may have liturgical differences, although our services in terms of its style and the way we present ourselves may be a little bit different, we want our kids to feel comfortable in any religious prayer setting. So, you know, we encourage our kids by saying, look, if you happen to go to services, go check out Chabad. Go check out Orthodox services. Go check out conservative synagogues. You know, the challenge that we're faced with, especially in Martin County, is that, you know, there's Chabad and then there's us. And then that's it. I mean, we are the only progressive Jewish voice in Martin County. But we also say, look, you know, you're 22 minutes down to West Palm or down to the Gardens. You know, go check out other services. Because whether you're in Florida, whether you're in Argentina, whether you're in Russia, whether you're in China, you know, we pray the same. The language is the same. And I think there's a lot of power and a lot of spirituality in that, you know, on how we access. I think to your question of, you know, how do we access prayer, I think part of it is based on, you know, a very simple Hebrew phrase that we say, kavanah. It's about the intention. If my heart is in the right place, then I can receive, you know, God's love or some form of direction. I remember as a kid, I mean, I would go to services every Friday night. My friends would make fun of me. Why are you going? Let's all go to the baseball game. Let's go to a hockey game. And a part of me that says, I actually really enjoy it. And part of it was for me to be able to say to the wider world and to my friends or whomever, leave me alone. It's the 1 hour that I can be with my community, with my friends, with God, and shut out the stresses and everything else going on in the world. And it was just that one time where everything seemed to stop and I could really center myself and ground myself in tradition. And I think that, you know, when we try and access prayer, and I'd be remiss to also, you know, not mention or should mention, of course, last week's very deadly attack in Poway, California. And it goes back to our conversation that we had before of, you know, when an attack happens on the Jewish community, whether we be in Florida, whether we be in California, in Thailand, it doesn't matter. What affects one affects all of us. And I think that hearing those attacks, you know, breaks our heart because there's a part that says, is it really an anti-Semitic attack? Absolutely. Absolutely. But really, when we focus in on it, that attack that happened last Saturday wasn't so much an attack on Judaism as it was an attack on our freedom. It's an attack on the liberty that we have to be able to practice and to be and have no apologies of who we are. I am Jewish. Whether I'm Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, we are one people. And I think that that message in and of itself has a lot of power in it. And we pray. And I think, you know, having the conversation that we had before of is prayer powerful or is it just pointless that we're just saying these platitudes of my prayers and thoughts go with you, to be able to really unpack those words. Yes, my heart bleeds. My heart is full of trepidation. Am I fearful of being a Jew living in Martin County? No. Am I a Jew living in America fearful? Absolutely not. And I think attacks like that make us as a Jewish community bind us together and says, at the end of the day, I am Jewish. Doesn't matter which denomination. Because at the end of the day, they're just labels. And labels, although tend to define us, they're not who we are. And I think that there's something there of, you know, we are one people.
Well, and the power of prayer is what unites us in that. The prayer, that's a singular language, as you said. And we've talked about this last week, Gary, about this idea of the platitudes of when our prayers during the time of tragedy. And unfortunately, once again, we're on the radio again, having to refer to another tragedy on a synagogue. And this has been like almost 3-4 weeks in a row now from the attacks in Sri Lanka upon the Catholic churches and
New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand. And now here we are with another temple attack. So but the intention that we bring to the prayer. So not just when we say my prayers and thoughts are with you, we put that on social media or we say that to someone. But what is the intention? Are we when we do pray? Because can our prayers even in the synagogue or in the temple or in the mosque? Can we just get sort of phone it in, right? And so this is what I'm saying, that where the difference where prayer can be powerful or powerless, you bring up this idea of intentionality. When we are praying, are we praying with intention? Do we really feel that we're making a connection, a relationship, we're reaching out to God, that there is an exchange, an engagement that's happening with the great divine, and that that connection with the divine can transform us and change us and help change this world. Do we really believe that, or is it something that just makes us feel better, that just connects us all? Or does there really, we're accessing a spiritual world, this godly love that can transform us and help bring a better world? What do you think, Gary?
I have two thoughts on that. The shooting that happened in California, 6 months to the day, mm-hmm. to the shooting in Pittsburgh. My partner, Joe Landy, his father had been president of that synagogue. Wow. They knew every single person that was killed, slaughtered, massacred, because that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to call things what they are. And how could God above let such a thing happen? Well, obviously God didn't pull the trigger. God had nothing to do with that. What was fascinating was the response to this horrible, horrible massacre within Pittsburgh and across the country. The entire city of Pittsburgh wrapped its arms around that synagogue. Thousands and thousands of people went to the funerals and memorials. And we realized that bad things are going to happen. And the way that people come together in situations of tragedy is amazing. And that comes from who we are on the inside as people. And it comes from the above. It comes from the divine. And I think that we have a false image of prayer. You know, everyone who saw, you know, Avengers Endgame, me, I doubt I'll see it again. 3 hours, too long. But prayer is not the Thanos finger snap. You don't go like that and I'm going to undo the bad things that happened. You know, prayer is much more thoughtful. And you can't not pray for years and walk into a church or a synagogue and say, okay, well, it's not happening. I knew it. I knew it. Maimonides has this really rough quote that says, prayer without concentration is like a dead child. So if we take at least 10 steps back from that, because that's a little harsh, you have to mentally align yourself. Kavanaugh, as Rabbi Durbin said, and if you are running in and your heart is going and you sit down, it's not going to happen. You have to approach prayer from a point of letting it come in to you and through you.
And how do you personally do that?
I'm a workaholic. My wife teases me. She says I have two speeds, fourth gear and park. It's probably accurate. I love park. I love letting myself slow down, but you have to let that happen. You know, you were talking before about we're in a post-religious age. And it's funny, when we all hear this, right? I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't believe in God. I believe in a higher power. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe in prayer. I like to meditate. Mm-hmm. And so these are really funny semantics.
Yes.
Because in the Jewish tradition, originally, there in the time of the temple, there was no formal list of prayers. You go into the temple and you would pray to yourself whatever thoughts you have. Then after the destruction of the temple, the big section of Jews are in Babylon, and they're trying to come up with a list of prayers. And it's not really until about 200 AD or so, I guess, where we start to have the formalized order of prayers that we see now. It's still a pretty long time. 1,800 years is a long time. But in order to pray, you have to be able to slow yourself down. I know that you can follow along in the service, or you can kind of go away in your mind for a little bit and come back. And that, to me, if you're doing that, you're not paying attention. You're actually in the zone.
So we're here on WSTU. This is a priest and rabbi, if you're just tuning in right now. And we have, as our guest, Gary Lesser from Lesser Landy and Smith, the law firm, and then, of course, Rabbi Matthew Durbin. And we're talking about the power of prayer, the intentionality of prayer. Is it powerful or powerless? So if you have any questions or thoughts on this, please give us a call here at the station, 772-220-9788, 772-220-9788. So this intentionality behind it. Yeah, so Rabbi.
And I think you know, just to speak to Gary's point, which I think is exceptionally valid and important to recognize, is that you can't expect yourself to walk into a synagogue or to walk into a church and to be immediately transformed. I think that especially in our prayers as Jews, as well as your prayers as Christians, is it's a relationship. We are in direct partnership and relationship with God.
Yes.
You can't expect your relationship with your spouse or your partner or your friend or your community to just be there, right? You have to work at it. It's the same thing that we say at Jewish weddings. When we break that glass at the end, is it really about the destruction of the first and second temple? Absolutely. Is it also about the fragility of relationships, that it takes work, and it is to be that constant reminder for us that we have to work at it to be able to be successful at it? Absolutely. And I think that that's really what it is with the power of prayer, is you can't expect it to just come and hit you in the face. You have to be there with sound mind and with sound body and with spirit to be able to say, I'm going to allow myself the opportunity to really take this in, the power of it. You know, we look at it from a spiritual perspective. We look at it from an academic perspective. It's a discourse. It's liturgy. Is the liturgy meant to elicit feeling and emotion? Absolutely. Is it meant to anger us? For some? Absolutely. And a part of me that says, especially with our high holiday liturgy, where I know some of it is very challenging, especially Yom Kippur, because the liturgy in Yom Kippur is very challenging. I may be angry. I may be disenfranchised with God. At the end of the day, those feelings are absolutely warranted. Those feelings are absolutely acceptable because you're present. You're there. You are engaged in some way. And I think the challenges and the struggles that we feel with God define us and actually help us through our struggles to get to the moment where we can actually form some form of direct partnership or direct relationship with God.
And that relationship has to be quite authentic. It has to be honest and authentic. And whenever I talk to parishioners about this, that when they're angry, they're frustrated, they're dealing with grief, and they're angry with God. Why would God allow this to happen? Why would God take away my partner? Why would God do such horrible, allow these horrible things to happen in this world? Saying, you know, you're not alone. If you read the Psalms, you read Lamentations, you know, you have people who feel this freedom to say, why God, why have you allowed this? God can take it. God can take your anger. God can take your frustration. I think the one thing I say is don't walk away from God. Mm-hmm. Don't lose all hope and just say, I'm done with God. Take the anger, the frustration, the doubt, and the struggle in prayer. That's prayer. That's conversation to God. So then you're in a relationship with God. You're keeping that conversation, and God can start to work with that and make something out of it and say, okay, and start to plant seeds in your heart, to hopefully, and bring the presences you need in your life, whether it is a friend, whether it's someone else who can be that presence of love in your life, or whether God's going to work with you directly to help with healing, to help with understanding, to help with clarity, but not to pull away.
And I think authenticity is vital, right? I remember years ago, I had gone to a colleague's house for dinner, and he was slightly Shomer Shabbos. I mean, he did not answer the phone. He didn't really watch TV. I mean, it's Shabbat was Shabbat. Like, you know, everything stops. And that one moment, you know, after dinner, kind of waiting for dessert, and the phone rings. And he looks and says, excuse me for one moment. And I was a little thrown back. Of, you know, I thought you were Shomer Shabbos. I thought you don't answer the phone. And he said, that was one of my daughters calling. And for 20-some-odd some years, every single Shabbat, I bless my children. That was my daughter calling from college overseas, and it was my way of blessing her. And I remember being so moved by that. And I remember I got home after that evening, and I don't claim to be Shomer Shabbos. There are certain things I don't do. I try not to answer my phone. I don't respond to emails. And I remember calling my mother and saying to my mom, why didn't you bless on Shabbat your four sons? And my mother stopped and said, because I didn't know. I didn't know the prayer. And, you know, for my brothers and everything else, and she would say that, you know, at the early stages when you were super young, I probably could have gotten away with it. But as you climb in years and with knowledge and everything else, my mother had said, I don't want to be inauthentic. You would recognize that. And I remember saying to my mom, and I think this is also speaks to the power of prayer, is that, you know, as Jews, we see things in two different avenues. One is the prescribed prayers, right? The prayers that have been set down, the prayers that have been cataloged, the prayers that have been organized in a structured format, right? Our Siddur, our prayer book, is
right.
Siddur, an order of our prayers.
We have a saving Book of Common Prayer for us in the Episcopal Church.
And then the second element, too, is beyond prescribed prayers is spontaneity, right? And I remember saying to my mom, all you had to say was, thank you, God, for the gift of my children. I said, that's not written in our prayer book. It's not organized in a structured fashion. It's recognizing the power of God, the power of life, the meaning of life. And at the end of the day, I'm being grateful for what I have. And I remember being really, really moved. And when we had children, I have three daughters, and every single Shabbat, every Friday night, to my daughter's bitter chagrin, when I place my hands on their heads and I bless them, and they don't want to be touched, and they want this process to be over. But a part of me that says, this is what we're doing. It's spontaneous. Thank you, God, for the gift of knowledge, the gift of life, just the gift that I'm recognizing the sanctity of the day and the importance of life's inner meanings. And I think that, you know, when we access prayer, it is through those two different, seemingly different opportunities and avenues, but ultimately comes to the same source.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I think in order to talk about the power of prayer, we have to talk about getting to pray. And and Rabbi Durbin correctly points out, you know, there's the prescribed prayers that we have, and then there's spontaneous prayer. In addition to people who make these semantics, you know, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual and all that. There are people who feel that they can't go to church or synagogue because they don't know the prayers. And they see that as a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
The Torah actually sort of requires us, Rabbi, and tell me if I'm misstating this, to actually pray to God in times of hardship. It's a fascinating idea. If you're having hardships, you have to pray to God. And I found, and we talked about this, when my mother got sick with lung cancer and then she died, it was, oddly enough, and I miss her lots and lots, it was an amazing process for me. And we talked about when she was dying, I started going to temple again regularly. I kind of got away from it. We're all so busy. Who has the time? I'll go next week. It's something I'll think about doing later, but then you know, later never really comes. And so did I go to synagogue and pray for God to spare my mother? Maybe. Did I think those prayers would be answered? No, of course not. You can't pray to God to win the lottery. You can't pray to God for some immediate thing for you. There's an old saying that when you pray within and you pray without. So I forget who it is, Rabbi Durbin, you might remember who it is, who said, Judaism is okay with agnosticism, not atheism, agnosticism. If you're asking questions about God and that sort of thing, you're seeking the right answers. Mm-hmm. So I learned, and then after my mom passed away, I decided to go to services regularly, something I'd never really done. And then it didn't take that long for me to get back in the saddle and follow the prayers, and my mind went somewhere else, it did. I found this peace I, for myself. As it turns out, many of my friends and family who knew that I decided to go to services every day for 11 months started showing up, were texting me, when are you going to go to services? Because in Judaism, you have prayer services three times a day. I'm not sure of anyone who goes three times a day, mind you, but it's about an opportunity. Now, you're commanded to say the Shema, the prayer for unity of God, twice a day. If I went in the morning, if I couldn't go, I'd go in the afternoon. If I couldn't do that, I'd go in the evening. Whatever I had in the evening would happen earlier or later, or not at all. And then it flew. And I found the whole process just transformative for me. And frankly, some of my friends who went along my journey are now regular synagogue goers as well.
And there was a consistency there. We talk about, at church, we've been talking about this, the spiritual disciplines that we carry in our life, the things that form us, our Christian formation. And we believe in the church that, you know, Jesus Christ gives you this forgiveness of your sins and this thing called grace, right? But it's similar that, so that's given to you freely. And so, Gary, I can give you a gym membership for free and say, hey, it's yours. It's free, right? But you still got to show up at the gym.
Yeah.
And you got to get your butt out of bed at 6 a.m. in the morning and get out there and schedule it and maybe get a trainer and work it for a good amount of time to start to really have your body reshaped. So the same thing with prayers. You're saying it's not the Thanos, snap your fingers, and it's all done. It's showing up at synagogue, at church, at mosque, wherever you go to have that relationship, not just meditate and just to be spiritual, but to really find a deeper relationship with God.
But I think that's just it, too, is that prayer is an exercise.
Yes.
We are exercising our mind, our body, our soul to get to that moment.
And you have to rinse and repeat. So as Gary had 11 months, 11 months is going to change you. And absolutely, it's making that commitment. So we're about to go to break. But what I want to leave you with here before we go to break is, you know, how is you your intentionality and consistency with prayer? And have you can? And I challenge you to say, would you, if you think there's some growth there, do something like Gary did, which is to you commit for 3 months, maybe even 3 weeks, that you say, I'm going to commit 10 minutes a day to prayer or showing up at your respective house of worship and to commune with God and see how that changes and what kind of changes that brings in your life. Because we all three of us here believe that it's transformative and it brings you closer to the divine. But and we want to get your thoughts on this. So please give us a call here at 772-220-9788. How you feel prayer has changed your life, or if you feel that prayer has not changed your life at all, we want to hear it. So 772-220-9788. We'll see you when we get back from break.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Welcome back. It's not often that I get to throw my voice in as we come back from commercial.
It sounds so good.
Well,
I don't know why you don't do it more.
Because you just have the amazing radio voice.
You got the radio voice, man. You got that deep, husky rabbi voice. That's why they call you the Rebu, my Rebu.
That is.
Hey, so let me quick question before we delve back into prayer here. You know, in the scripture, when Mary Magdalene sees Jesus at the tap in the empty tomb, she hears his voice and she calls him Rabuni. So that can you just? I haven't looked that up yet. Rabuni, is it that's Hebrew?
My master.
My master. Okay, great. Okay, good. My day is set now. My day is not set. No, that's good. It's going to help me so much. Friday is, you know, usually my sermon day. So this is today is where I work on the sermon, and so now I have some extra morsels here. But this is great. All this stuff is I know it feeds the rabbi and I and Gary. You know, as an attorney, We were curious too, especially as a personal injury attorney. And if you're just tuning in here, we have Gary Lesser with us, personal injury attorney, noted as one of the leading personal injury attorneys in the state of Florida. So it is just an honor to have him here. But also, he's just a man of faith, and refers to himself as a conservadox Jew, a mixture of conservatism and orthodoxy. So if you have any questions for Gary, please 772-220-9788. But keep it about prayer, and the legal advice has to wait till later, because then he has to turn the clock on, and if you call in about that. So.
There is no clock.
So Gary, you know, the rabbi and I were talking about this before the show, that you have, you know, you see a lot of damage. You see a lot of brokenness in this world as an attorney, especially personal injury. And you're fighting for justice. Right. And there's probably a lot of moving images and stories that you hear of just that can be horrible heartbreak of injustices of lives being lost, of horrible injuries that have happened. And how does your prayer life engage at all with what you take on during the day? Because I know that can weigh a lot on your heart, and maybe it's not easy to stop that from coming home when you try to bring that home, when you just spent hours and hours on a case that's just gut-wrenching. How does your faith and prayer life interact with your vocational life?
You know, I've never been asked that question. And thinking about it now, actually a pretty great deal. Unfortunately, with the job that I do, I see a lot of tragedy. I see people who are very hurt. I see clients who have lost their husband, wife, child. Those are tragic cases. I've had so many cases where people have lost a child, car accident, you know, some other incident where they're hurt. It's terrible. And I try to listen. You know, the irony is, I think there are a lot of us out there who like to pretend that we're a priest or a rabbi. We don't have to do the actual heavy lifting that's involved with that. And I've always been friends with my rabbis, and I know the life that clergy really have in dealing with funerals and mourning and illness. I, in my job, scratch the surface of that in terms of, you know, it's part of my job. It's not my job. I try to listen a lot. I encourage my clients to get counseling. I encourage them, if they have any spiritual inclination, to talk to their clergy or to find clergy. You have to find your way when senseless tragedy happens, and you can do that on your own and be very sad, or do it with others, do it in a house of worship, and you can't undo what's done, but you find your way to dealing with what happens. I do carry it with me. It's part of my stress level, but it's part of the job. I like to be there for my clients, but yeah, I need a release. Prayer is my favorite release. I can be there in peace. You know, you're going all day long, you're going, and then you sit down. And if you avoid the centrifugal force of it taking a while for you to slow down, I sit, I do some deep breathing, and I just try to slow myself down. And when I'm in prayer services, that's where I'm at. I mean, sometimes you drift away, but that's where I'm at. It's for my mental and spiritual well-being. Invaluable. I couldn't even describe how helpful it is.
So, sorry, just to go back on, you know, just the mass amount that you must carry with you of hearing from client after client after client. It must take, you know, obviously, as you mentioned, it must take its toll on you, right? We see it every day, and we're confronted with the same or, you know, different conversations that we have. Where do you find your strength? You know, I mean, is there a time of saying, you know, through meditation or through other opportunities to be able to say, okay, I need for myself some mental health for me to excuse myself, to center myself, to find that call that says, I need my release. And is it through prayer? Is it through spontaneity? The spontaneous acts of prayer? Is it, you know, through seeking counseling, you know, through others? You know?
Yeah. For myself, I actually think more people are hearing that call and they just don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know that they are carrying a load, and what are they going to do about it? You know, the easiest thing to do is comfort eating. I've taken that approach, and you know, it's successful for a few minutes, and then I have nothing to show for it but extra pounds. I started carving out the time. And it is a lot like working out. And you can't expect to have perfect form and have great results after one time. You have to get into a flow and a routine, but it won't happen unless you actually stop and make it happen. So to all of our listeners out there, I would say if you've thought about going to services but you don't go because you don't know where to go, ask around. If you've thought about going to services but you don't want to go alone, ask a friend. A real friend will say yes. And if you go and you have your first experience and it's kind of like, all right, this was interesting, but you know, I didn't really get as much out of it as I want. It's because you have to give it a few more times and find your place within your own soul to find your comfort level there. And then when you allow that to happen, it's wonderful. It really is.
So, which is so true, which I think before services sometimes at church, I'll get up before the congregation and ask them what their intention is. Why are they here? Yeah. What are you seeking and what are you willing to surrender? Because it sets your mindset so we don't get caught up. It's easy in our, we come from both liturgical denominations where there is a flow, there is a structure that's there, and we repeat a lot of the prayers, the creeds for, you know, in the Christian, in the Episcopal Church, the creeds and the prayer of confession and sing hymns that are going to be familiar, and we just might get in this flow and just say it. But if there's an intention behind it, what are you bringing to the, we say, like, what are you bringing to the altar? What are you working with? What struggle, what conflict are you bringing with God? Or what source of gratitude, what place of gratitude are you bringing? And allow that prayer to just fuel through everything that you do during the service. Now there's intention. Now you are seeking God. In any kind of relationship, there has to be a focus. And you can't just show up. If you just show up for your marriage and just say, we're going to go through the routines, whatever, the marriage is going to get dried up. But if you're like, today I want to be the best husband that I can be. I want to be much more selfless, much more compassionate to my spouse. I'm going to be intentional about that. I'm going to get some flowers for my wife. You know, those things make huge differences, right? But if you just show up and just, you're kind of just
walking
through it.
But even to engage in that conversation that says, why are you here, right? It forces me as, you know, a member in the pew to actually dig deep and say, why am I here, right? I've shown up. I've done half the work. But, of course, the bulk of the other work is to work through ourselves of why I am here and to be engaged, right? I'm here because I love the services. I'm here because I know as Jews, after our service, we give you what we call an oneg Shabbat, the light of Shabbat. We give you food. I'm here for the food. For some, it's I'm here for the social. I'm here to see my friends. For others, it's I'm here to be with my community. But, you know, or maybe I'm struggling with something in my life. You know, remember years ago, I gave a sermon and it was about intention. It was about why we are here. And I remember somebody, you know, in the pew that looked very uncomfortable. And after the service, I wanted to go up and talk with them, and they left. And I remember thinking to myself, did I say something? Was it me? Was it my words? And then, you know, making the phone call after Shabbat to say, hey, let's, you know, can I meet? You know, I'd love to talk to you. Let me take you to lunch. And as we went through lunch, you know, and I said, I noticed that you were really uncomfortable with the service. Is everything okay? Was it something that I had said? And they said, no, Rabbi, it wasn't you. I had a really tough time at work. And I think that there are times that we don't know what people bring to our communities. We're not aware of the struggles that they have internally. And we have to allow that space for that individual or individuals to be able to be in a safe environment, a comfortable environment, to be able to say, it's okay.
Now, so let's take all that and come back around on this, where when you're having you're dealing with a tough week at work, you're dealing with personal tragedy, you're dealing with a bout of depression, of anxiety, whatever you're dealing with, then how does that fuel into your prayer life? How do you bring that? How would you talk to a parishioner, Gary, a friend of yours, who says, you know, what is really God going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, if God's going to allow all this other stuff, why should I bring this to God? Why would God really care that much about me for this little problem that I have going on? Or if I can't keep, you know, can't pay the light bill, or if for Gary, for yourself, for this, let's say that something happens where there's such an incredible act of injustice that happens where maybe the case went the way that you guys didn't see it. You know, that if someone says, well, why would I pray? What's the point of that? How would you respond?
Well, you know, cases tend to work out, fortunately. You know, we screen them. We try to help people we think we can help. It's the underlying tragedy. I resolved a case yesterday for the death of a 95-year-old woman. T-boned. She was a passenger. She wasn't restrained. her driver, 89 years old, was restrained. He had some broken ribs and was otherwise okay. She got thrown about, lots of blunt force trauma, and she died. And she was totally independent, lived alone. He was driving her to the beautician, which she did every Wednesday. The case came to me via her granddaughter, who I've known for a while, through the Anti-Defamation League. And how do you make sense of that? This is a woman who, at 95, was going to go for a while. You know, her health was pretty darn good. I mean, amazing. And so when we finally resolved the case yesterday, and the clients were grateful for it to be over and, you know, happy that we worked hard for them, and I have this thing that I say, and it sounds so pro forma. I know this result doesn't make up for your loss, and I'm very sorry. And then she said to me, the daughter, of course it doesn't make up for the loss. And then I said, listen, this is something that I say to a client, because I have my job to do, and my job is to, you know, win the case and do as well as I can. But my equally important job is to help the client through the process, to listen whenever you want to talk. So, you know, the legal system has its purpose, but, you know, I try to help the there I'm back. But, you know, you have to kind of find your way through this. It's something I spoke about specifically with her. The decedent, the woman who was killed, left a son and a daughter. The son, not interested, like very closed. But the daughter, she really wanted to have some of these conversations, and she started going to synagogue. How did more Jews go back to synagogue? Well, Rabbi knows. Mm. It's when someone's sick and after they die, and you go see Mourner's Kaddish. And that, as we talked about, was sort of transformational for me. Last week, I had a friend who lost his father. His father had Alzheimer's for almost 10 years. So, you know, they say, oh, I lost my father a while ago. But still, to physically lose your parent is the finality of it all. And he's a very good friend who I respect a lot. And he was one of the top two guys who was always there for me in services. I learned later that he actually really couldn't read Hebrew, which is just fascinating because he seemed very intent with what he was doing. And he said, you know, Gary, I kind of have my quiet time in my mind. I follow what's going along, and it brings me peace. But and that's why I go, but my close second to the rabbi's point, I like the community. So his father wasn't religious. He suddenly didn't really, you know, they did a funeral. He didn't want to do a shiva. I'm a good friend. I strongly encouraged him. Hmm. And with the help of his wife, they did one night of shiva. So then I call him up. I said, when are you going to go to Minyan? Say, Mourner's Kaddish. He says, you know, I'm not really going to do that. I said, well, tell me what night works for you.
You didn't give him an out.
And I might have hypothetically thrown a little bourbon into the deal.
Sure.
But what he didn't know was I called 9 or 10 of our friends. So he goes to services, and there is community. There are his friends. And he looked at me, nodded his head like, all right, thanks. And that to me is what it was all about. And I was so happy to do that for him and help him in that little small way, because that's what it's all about. You pray and you are a part of a community. And I think part of our society tells us we're alone. You have your iPhone and your iPad and your Netflix, and you see people walking around looking at their devices, and we're all a little guilty of that. But what's one of the first things in the Bible? Man was not meant to live alone. Mm-hmm. So I find the power of community to be especially helpful and comforting. And if for no other reason, if you, the listener, are not sure about this whole prayer business, give it a shot and go with some friends and be a part of a community. It'll change your life.
So that's been we've had some recurring themes here, which is one is just intentionality. One is intentionality of just showing up and saying, what am I seeking from God? And it's okay. And then the second part was authenticity. So be intentional about your walk with prayer. What are you seeking from God? And actually having a real conversation. And two, it's okay to be authentic, that it doesn't have to be. I remember my father saying for a while, he would almost be speaking in like King James language to our Lord, and saying, oh, thou great God who has, you know, brought me forth to this day. And then after a while, it became more personal, right? It became like Abba, you know, that just this father. So there's an authenticity you can be and just say, listen, I'm broken, I'm feeling hurt, I'm angry, I'm upset, help me through this, give me the power I need to get through this day. But then this third part that's come up throughout this last hour is community, the power of community. And, you know, we have a healing service every Tuesday at our church, and it's powerful because, yes, we're responding to the call to pray for one another. And Christian scripture talks about go to the elders of the church and they will lay their hands on you and put holy oils on you when you're sick or when you're in a tough time. But I think what really works for that service is, yes, the power of the Spirit is working, and I've seen people healed. I've also seen people just continue to struggle with it. But I think the most important thing is there is this community of folks who show up every Tuesday, you know, at 12 o'clock, and they know that there's these regulars that are there. And when they come to the prayer rail to be prayed over, that there's people in the pew who are praying for them. And then after the service is over, they can go out to lunch. And so you're not alone. Yeah. You're not alone, especially when you're dealing with whatever you're dealing with. You can show up on a Tuesday and know that there's this group of people who are all saying, I need healing. You know, sometimes on Sunday, you feel like everyone's there down their Sunday.
But I think part
best,
of it, too,
you know?
is as we've discussed, it's about pushing yourself. Yeah. I might not want to go. I might struggle with, you know, driving over that, you know, Palm City Bridge to get into Stewart. I may just want to just stay at home. But I think the second we can push ourselves to a point, and I think it's also about being vulnerable, and that being vulnerable is okay. It's okay to show our emotional state, where we're at. And I think as long as we have that ability, is transformative. It definitely transforms us in ways that, you know, we see this with a lot of our kids when we push them and push them, which is we want to stretch you to the point where maybe it is uncomfortable. And sit with that uncomfortableness, because you will at some point seek some resolution or some answers that we're striving for. I think prayer is very powerful if and only if we can become vulnerable.
Ah, so that's what we'll leave you with, is that the power of prayer, is it powerful or powerless? It can be powerful if you choose to open up your heart and be present and allow it. So it's a sort of like the scripture from Malachi, you know, just test me. God is saying, test me, try me, and be intentional about it. And, you know, I'll go back to just the Avengers, is that, you know, there is a snap of the fingers, but it took 3 hours to get there. So it was a long journey in that movie, and it took about 20 years for the Marvel Universe to get to that point. So there's a journey you take with prayer and your relationship with God, because we had to go through many, many movies to get to this final one here that brought everything to a close that for now. But in any event, yes, Gary.
You know, Rabbi Durbin talked about pushing yourself, and that means if you don't want to get in the car, get in the car. And if you're not sure about walking in the door, walk in the door. And I think the second part of it is to get to that vulnerability, to be able to say, I'm here because, don't expect that immediately. You know, give yourself the opportunity. Going back to the working out metaphor, you're not going to have huge muscles or perfect form the first time. Give yourself time. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Being there, go again, and you will absolutely find your way. I have yet to meet someone who doesn't try to go to services a few times, who doesn't actually complete the journey. But you have to get there, and you have to say, I can't do it all in one shot. We're always on a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm. All right, beautiful. So, Gary, we are just so grateful for you. We know you got a very busy schedule, and you got offices all over the place, you know, from West Palm to Stewart to Boyne Beach, and you made time to come here to the studio with us. And so we're grateful to have you here and bring your wisdom. I hope that, you know, in the future you come back, because this is just you're just a fountain of wisdom, and your faith, especially in context of what you deal with as a personal injury attorney, has been really revealing for us and inspiring for us. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it. Best hour of my day until I go to services tonight.
And Rabbi, you got some stuff coming up at the temple, right?
So we do. Monday evening, we will be bringing, we're going to be showcasing a film called Operation Finale, which is the trial and capture of Adolf Eichmann. And of course, in 1960, it has been the only person that Israel has ever put to death before. So we will be bringing in Avner Avraham, who is a former Mossad agent and lead consultant on the film. That starts at 6 o'clock Monday evening. I hope you will join us there.
And at the church, we will have a final concert series is coming to a close. So this Saturday from 2 to 4, we have a jazz concert series that's happening at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. That's at 623 Southeast Ocean Boulevard. You can find it on the website, www.stmarys-stewart.org. God bless you all. And if you're on the fence, just show up. Whether it's at the temple, whether it's at the church, just go. Whether at the mosque, wherever your house of worship is, just go and seek. Come with intention and be open and just be present with the Lord. And to start that relationship or reintroduce that relationship into your life. So God bless you all, and Gary, have a fantastic day.
Thank you, and you too.
Fighting the good fight. Rabbi, fight the good fight. And we'll see you all next Friday. Check out our podcast on iTunes, where you can always see and watch every show there. And subscribe, because we love to have you in the community. Peace.